Chapter 20. Hevea. Hevea Mundi? Asked Kerestina Sulin Almie. Wait, like the ragman? The travelled opinions guy? Hevea stared at her. It wasn't often someone managed to wrong-foot him at the very start of an interview, but here he was. And that was the drawback of having a public ID under the same tagline as his spook work, certainly. But it was rare his two worlds clashed when he wasn't personally bringing them together.
"I, Moonlight," he said. "You can assume I'm wearing my other hat here."
"Oh, right." The woman still seemed entirely at ease, chatty, eager to help. "I like your stuff."
"That's very kind of you," Hevea said automatically, shaking off a touch of the surreal.
It was just the two of them and the recording rig, here in the heart of the Mordant's Hammer. The interrogation room was intentionally spare, just metal frame furniture and bare walls, adorned with only a little tracery of machinery, enough to suggest the room might have other purposes than hosting a friendly chat. Almie didn't seem to have noticed.
"Madame Almie, you can imagine what I'm here to discuss. I'd hoped to talk to Captain Rostand, but I understand Broken Harvest killed him."
"Yes, while you were retaking your ship from them. Some might say that was a little out of the league of a salvage crew."
"Some didn't know Rollo," she told him with a hard smile. "Also, some might not have had a Partheni ship and soldier to hand."
Hevea had the irrational impulse to school her in how to behave under interrogation. Play down the Parthenon involvement, or at least make me work for it. And she was a lawyer, wasn't she? Accredited out of Scintilla, of all places. A very odd start when you ended up working the spacer circuit. And he'd read her file, read all of their files, where they'd existed. Almie had more detail in hers than the rest, coming from a settled background rather than being born to the spacer life. A nasty business for her there, at the end. Expensive blood she'd ended up shedding, even if it was all legal under Scintilla's ridiculous dueling codes.
"What happened to the Yamaru?"
"We stowed it, in the deep void. I mean, you could talk Idris into taking you there. Or we could nip back in the Vulture and bring the whole thing back to you."
"We have our own intermediary navigator," he said.
"So don't think you can just vanish."
He was trying hard to be the bad guy interrogator, the looming shadow of Mordant House, but she seemed blithely unaware of it. He'd been minded to go in heavy-handed, with accusations of them selling out Hugh to the Parthenon, all of that. But it was hard to put the screws on when she was being so damn cooperative. Easier right now just to keep a regular police hat on and let her talk, see what spilled out on the table.
"So why were this Broken Harvest mob involved?"
Something he had a personal stake in finding out, given the unpleasant interview he'd just managed to survive.
"Said the Yamaru was their ship, or was carrying their cargo," she shrugged. "Or, maybe, I mean, just the wreck itself has a price, right? Who wouldn't want the chance to go over an architect's leavings? That's why we picked up Delegate Trine, after all. We wanted to know just what we had, now we had it.
Recoup your losses." Her mildly reproving look actually made him feel bad about the words.
"Our losses are three dead friends, many a Mundi. But we'd still have to make a living. And if we could sell the thing to you, to the Parthenon, to some Hanny consortium. I mean, architects are everyone's problem, right? Even the hegemony would be interested.
Probably that's where Aklu the Hook's buyers are."
He let himself blink at her without any sign of recognition. Who? Oh, well. She flexed her fingers enthusiastically. Agent, let me tell you about the Broken Harvest's top dog, because that is really worth an opinion piece. He had tried to interrogate the Hanny, whose colonial trade permits transliterated his name as Kirkkta, although his human colleagues referred to him as Kit or Kittering. Hervea suspected strongly that the alien was leaning heavily on the species communications barrier to frustrate any kind of questioning. And although Mordant kept a few Hanny on the payroll, he hadn't had time to requisition any. So, one useless suspect. Delegate Trine turned out to be another dead end, not even a member of the Vulture crew, but an academic with a list of colonial qualifications as long as a human arm. The problem was the delegate in front of their name. Hiver assets would have been fair game under the reciprocal agreements between Hugh and the Hiver Assembly. Delegates were a different matter, a rank awarded sparingly by the Hivers and only conferred upon individuals of particular significance and knowledge. Hugh had agreed not to prod one without going through slow official channels. This in return for the Hivers respecting Hugh's own diplomats and, not to put too fine a point on it, their spies. It turned out that the Dark Joan really had been transporting someone with diplomatic immunity, but their credentials had been Hiver Assembly rather than Parthenon. Ollian Ollie Timo was another matter. They'd got her out of the Castigar engineering frame by a careful mix of reason and veiled threat, although it hadn't done much to take the fight out of her. She turned up in a six-legged walker instead. Hervea's crew had done their best to scan it for hidden weapons, but the thing was a mess of clashing parts and incompatible tech, and spacers were so damn ingenious with their jury rigging. For all they knew, the whole thing could have been a bomb or a homemade accelerator cannon. Well, she demanded, what then? Her finger stumps flexed, and the feet of the walker scraped on the metal floor like fingernails on a board. I will have some carpet put down when we hit dock, Hervea vowed, hiding the way the sound wormed into his head. Madame Timo, you know why we're here.
I'm saying nothing.
You're a colonial citizen, madame. You resent your government taking an interest when it looks like the war's back on. Meeting her bluntness with bluntness was probably the best tactic.
Not my government. You know spacers get no say in what goes on in Berlinhof.
Tell me about the Amaru.
I'm telling you nothing, not one word, on advice of my lawyer.
Madame Timo, Hervea said calmly, I have just had a perfectly pleasant and informative conversation with your lawyer.
Then you don't need me, do you?
Let's change topic then. Tell me about the Broken Harvest.
Those fuckers, she said,
forgetting instantly that she wasn't telling him anything. She proceeded to describe the cartel, their SEL leader, their Tothiat enforcers, and a great deal more, without any real prompting from him. I suppose it was this Mesmon who was taking part in the anatomy lesson when I was there. So fine, you don't like them, he concluded for her. I've had my own run-in with them, as it happens, while on your trail. This Mesmon who killed your captain.
We did for him, the bastard.
You didn't. And he saw her face go still and then clench like a fist. He told her what he'd seen, the way that the unspeakable Aklu punished failure in its more durable servants. She didn't like Mesmon being alive, but he could see she didn't mind him being alive and flayed, and she appreciated both the warning and the mental image of the Tothiat's torture.
So, tell me about the Parthenon. Those eugenicist fuckers, she snapped. Oh, that's what's got your panties twisted, is it? That figures.
She hunkered forwards in her walker, with a twitch of her limb stumps.
Let me tell you exactly what I think of those turds.
Which led him on to what he reckoned was going to be the toughest interview. They had not persuaded the Parthenae to take off her armour. She wasn't quite under arrest, although Hevea had broad powers when it came to foreign operatives in colonial space. Her ID was good on the surface too, but stank of espionage the moment he turned a spook's practiced gaze on it. He had three marines in with him, also armoured, and all with accelerators. If anything kicked off, they would end up riddling the hammer's hull with holes, and also anyone who got in their way. Hervea's pessimistic assessment of anything kicking off included himself being used as a human shield, and he was, as a rule, averse to death by friendly fire. It's never that friendly, let's face it. At least she'd agreed to leave her own gun on the Vulture. Sitting down, he opened with, "Well now, Myrmidon, you're a long way from home." She nodded, watching him. Everyone told you how impossible Parthenae were to read, but it wasn't true. The warrior angels were humans too, perhaps their biggest secret. They really weren't machines or perfectly bioengineered superwomen, although both nativists and the Parthenon had unintentionally colluded to hide these facts. Right now, this one, Solis, was tense, a little antagonistic, but he could tell she was worried too. Worried for herself? Concerned about Parthenae interests? He didn't think so.
I'm anticipating that this interview is going to consist mostly of belligerent silence, Myrmidon.
He'd half expected her to deny the rank, claim she was renegade, freelance, some other fiction. She just let it go by, though.
But look, you'll understand that your mere presence has put your fellows in even more trouble. My superiors see a possible architect presence, and then they see the Parthenon in its shadow. You don't need me to tell you that relations between Hugh and the Parthenon are in a particularly fragile state right now. Half my friends in the Colonial Reserves were on standby for active duty, even before your friends pulled their stunt at Luncrow. Your government is making a lot of demands on Hugh right now, Myrmidon. And we both know there are plenty in mine who are reaching for their guns too. No denial that the Parthenon was still her government. No protestations of having gone rogue. She was trying to be impassive, but he'd seen the twitch when he talked about the others being in deeper shit just because she was around.
I'm no nativist, he told her. I don't automatically assume anything the Parthenon does is inimical to human interests. Because we're all human, right?
The tiniest nod, small enough that maybe she didn't realise she'd made it. And the Parthenon had its own nativist equivalents, its hardliners, and so maybe Solis wasn't one of them. Always preferable to deal with non-fanatics.
This is where you give me at least the cover story of why you linked up with these reprobates.
She smiled, so unexpectedly that he was slightly taken aback.
That's a good word for them. And the cover story? Only I was expecting you to go long on how the Parthenon was our front line against the architects, always had been, and that's how you ended up involved?
A blink.
The information about the architect came out later, as you're probably aware. And I won't deny my government's interested in it now. Of course we are. Who wouldn't be? It's a problem for all of us.
She took a deep breath. I'm Myrmidon Exequitur Solis, Heaven's Sword Sorority Basilisk Company.
And, after a beat,
angels of punching you in the face.
Huh. He assimilated that. Quite a salad of competencies going on there.
Basilisk is a mass loom gunner, isn't it?
She looked surprised that he knew, nodded shortly.
From soldier to spy is quite a jump.
I'm not a spy. I'm just tasked with working outside our territory. That's all Exequitur means.
But you didn't bring your mass loom.
Aren't you glad?
Hugh hadn't managed to replicate the Parthenis' huge gravitic weapons, and that still smarted.
So, why are you here, if not to prep for the next architect invasion?
And he was too confident now. He let something slip, because
you know that already. You've talked to Ollie and she's told you.
Hevea smiled, not quite sure what had given it away.
Well, you've got me there.
And?
And Idris is a free man. It's his choice.
Real feeling now, in her voice.
My people would rather I twisted his arm, guilted him, forced him, kidnapped him even. And I haven't. It wouldn't be right. But you've no right to stand in his way. If he decides to work for us, he's free to make that choice.
He's a military asset,
Hevea told her automatically, and having been frank, decided that frankness was the way to go.
I can seek authority to detain him, to keep him out of the hands of a foreign power, one we may well be at war with in the near future. That is literally something I can do, as an agent of Hugh and Mordant House, in the same way that your own heads of staff would slam the door the moment one of your weapons techs decided that a luxury apartment on the Berlinhof Archipelago sounded like a cushy retirement option.
Est-ce compris?
She nodded sharply, hating him, but understanding him. Maybe she hated herself a little too, because the pair of them knew damn well that her next order might be to cut loose from the Vulture's crew and take Idris with her, whether he wanted it or not. Hevea took a break then, grabbed some cafe, ordered his notes. Between Chris and Ollie, at least, he had a good idea of what had gone on with the Amaru and the architects. And nobody had reported any planets missing recently. So maybe the Amaru was a one-off event. Except his racing heart didn't believe that.
It's what everyone will tell each other. That one fluke doesn't mean they're back. They'll tell that to each other, and nobody will believe the news is true.
He was trying to imagine the wave of panic spreading across the colonies, once elusive rumour became hard evidence in the form of a wrecked Amaru. Mass evacuations, worlds defecting pell-mell to the hegemony, apocalyptic cults and survivalist brotherhoods and, yes, the goddamn nativists would find some way to capitalise on it as well.
Betrayed!
They'd shout, and get in the way, just when Hugh needed unity. To Hevea, as a professional agent, the thought of the paperwork alone filled him with dread. And he knew the Parthenon wanted their own pet int too. Not exactly hard to guess, even if Ollie and Solis hadn't independently confirmed it. And right now, if the architects were back, the Parthenon would be even more determined to get an int on their side. Which only left one interview to go. Idris Telemier was slumped in his seat. He had the same shadow of stubble Hevea remembered from Lungcrow, the same inward-looking, flinching manner. Stripped of his friends, he looked as though he was waiting to be beaten with hoses or have wires clipped to his nipples.
Hell, man, Hevea said, sitting down across from him, This doesn't have to be that sort of conversation.
You...
Tolemier stared at him bleakly. I said all I wanted to say to you on Luncro. I don't want anything to do with you anymore. I did my bit. Nobody can say I didn't.
Look, Menhir.
I stopped the war.
Tolemier burst out suddenly, eyes wide.
I went into the mind of an architect. Me and the others. We stopped the war. We saved everyone. You cannot imagine.
He clearly had more to say, but his teeth were clamped together now, and he couldn't get the words out. His wrists were pressed to the arms of the chair, as though, in his head, he was shackled to it.
Menhir Tolemier, Idris.
Hevea kept his voice very calm. This, he indicated the interview room, isn't even about you.
Sure it isn't.
Drawn wire tension was pulling every part of the man taut.
You found the wreck of a goddamn architect attack, Hevea snapped. Why is it nobody's focusing on that exactly? We could get an architect over Magda or Leif or even Berlinhof any moment. As we sit here, it may already have happened. Packet trade to Jericho space is pretty damn slow after all. A few billion people maybe just got offed. Well, I'm goose chasing after your crew to ask some questions. Help me out here, maybe.
And that was the right approach, yanking the man out of his self-made misery hole.
It's not my fault, Tolemier told him.
Aggrieved, but that was better than self-pitying.
Nobody's saying it is, Hevea said. Look, I'm not even starting on the whole Parthenon thing. Why you have a pet soldier aboard your ship?
Not yet, anyway. Though that is definitely on the menu for interview too.
Just tell me what you know about the Amaru and what happened to it. I've got the facts from the others. Give me anything that'll have only come to you.
I mean, why would they?
Idris burst out. The non sequitur taking Hevea's train of thought and shunting it into a siding.
They attacked one ship. One hegemony freighter. Since when was that how architects did things? They take out planets, and even then, only ones we're actually living on. 1,000 rocks out in the void, and none of them get special treatment. Only places that are someone's home.
The Amaru had a crew, and they called their ship home, Hevea suggested.
It's wrong. It's not how they work.
Because the war had been all kinds of trauma for the Ents, but at least they'd thought they knew how the enemy operated.
And yet, we all saw the Amaru had been just architected. And you're asking why nobody's focusing on that fact? Because the Amaru was too small a disaster. And people need something big to make them understand, Menhir Mundi. Everyone's built new lives for themselves in the last 40 years. I watched them do it.
Shaking his head wildly at the foolishness of it.
At first, people were terrified to put down roots. They still had their bags packed, and every ship had spare pods to carry refugees. You're too young. You wouldn't know. But year by year, when the architects stayed gone, I saw people begin to realise they could live again. Build, settle, invest, have families. And now, if they're back, all that goes away. We go back to being doomed every day of our lives. So take it from me. Nobody will focus on this goddamn fact until some colony somewhere gets an extra moon all of a sudden.
and then gets worked over. His shoulders hunched further. I don't want to believe it. I saw the wreck up close, and I don't.
And so you came here to get confirmation from this expert you knew from way back?
What? Yes.
The story's still not right. He had the maddening sense of a missing piece, but they'd all told the same tale so far.
If he wanted the hard truth, that meant harsh methods. Actual arrests, solitary confinement, serious interrogation at a secure mordant facility. It also meant paperwork, expense, and having to justify it to his bosses. Given the stakes, it wouldn't take much justification, but still.
Do your job, man.
No place for a soft heart in Mordant House. But he'd always fought against becoming the sort of man who reached for extreme measures as a matter of course.
Which means maybe I'm not the right man for the job anymore. The soft touch first, he told himself. Time later for the rest. If it's necessary.
He had done it before, when he had to. He had never liked it. It was the crumbling cliff edge of decency he clung to.
Meneer Tillemier, he tried again. The presence has shifted.
Hervea went cold.
You mean the thing in Unspace? The thing people feel, that isn't really there.
Idris just stared at him.
Is it not, though?
What?
Hervea said hoarsely. Do you even mean shifted? I don't have the words for it. Your own int. What does she say?
How does he know our int is female?
No disguising his surprise, and suddenly it was Tillemier with the level and knowing stare, and Hervea was shifting uneasily.
She hasn't said anything. You haven't asked her. But she's on a leash, one of the new class out of the liaison board, right? When the board took over from the old int program, they went for quantity. She hasn't been doing it as long as me. I've been in and out of Unspace 50 years, Meneer Mundy. Something's changed. Maybe they are back. Maybe they're practicing on the small things before they take on a planet again. Maybe they're rusty.
Hervea let them go back to the Vulture because they demanded it, and he was getting enough cooperation to make the open-handed approach worthwhile. And he wouldn't call any of this crew traitors or criminals, exactly. Spacers didn't like to feel they lived in a universe that could tell them what to do, and he could work with that. Worst came to worst, he could pledge some of the budget, because it was amazing how quickly most spacers could be bought once they felt they were making a deal, rather than knuckling under. He composed his report, letting the spacers stew. The hammer was still clamped to the Vulture, because he wasn't done with them and their secrets. Most likely they were hiding a little light smuggling, customs evasion or something similar, and he would drop some heavy hints that he didn't care an iota of largesse about that sort of thing. But if it was something else, maybe Almier would talk the rest into coming clean. Or if it really was funny business with the Parthenon, Timo might give up the goods on that front.
But what if it's hegemony stuff?
If that was the case, then he had a problem on his hands. Hegemony, Parthenon and an intermediary all in the same small boat. With a rumoured architect out there too. That wasn't the sort of mix Mordant House was going to like. He rubbed at his forehead, hoping sincerely that nothing of the sort was going on. After all, spacers constituted a good 30% of the human population, and they were traditionally sanguine about doing business with anyone they chose, though nativist sentiments were starting to change that. "Not my job, just a servant. Focus on the greater good." He felt that familiar baseline unhappiness of someone who would be judged entirely according to the moral decisions made by others. Then his comm implant went off, and Captain Keffi, who'd been sans foi itself when facing down the Boyarin, was shouting at him. Hevea activated his ready room's viewscreen and saw an Essiel ship bearing down on them. "How long have you been keeping that to yourself?" Hevea demanded, and Keffi assured him that no, the newcomer had come out of unspace practically on top of them. "Hail them, full colours, standard codes for hegemony vessels," Hevea directed, on his way to the bridge already. His implant would keep him in the loop, but he had a need to be there, in the same place physically as his crew. "Signal the Samphire for backup." Although the antiquated Navy picket ship wasn't going to be much help if this turned into a shooting war. Standard codes for hegemony vessels. Because there wasn't any mistaking the ship design. And what the hell did it mean to meet an Essiel ship so far away from anywhere they'd claimed as their own? Except Jericho housed extensive originator ruins, and hegemony cultists had been whining about gaining access since forever. Dealing with that hot potato was absolutely not Hevea's job. But maybe he'd become a new first line of defence. The vessel had come out of unspace in a slow tumble, a thing like a twisted silver rose. Hegemony ships tended to adopt multi-petaled forms, yet this one looked different, less geometric than usual. There were fewer straight lines, every frond and flange shaped to follow a rippling curve. It was as though a transformative wave had frozen as it rippled through the ship's substance. It made Hevea's eyes ache to look at it. Talking with the hegemony was a pain at the best of times, unless they had some of their pet humans aboard to translate. Even then you never quite knew if you were getting the alien master's intended meaning. They weren't hasty, though. They loved their pomp and posturing, as befitted a species that had evolved sitting on its fundament. "Their guns are hot," one of Keffi's people was shouting as Hevea hit the bridge. "They're not slowing." "The hell? Are they responding to hails?" Hevea demanded. The central screen showed a model of objects in near space, buzzing with trajectory lines and a host of numbers. The left screen showed an image of the newcomer, enlarged and cleaned up in all its disturbing glory. The right panel displayed technical data, including the fact that those twisted petals hid a dozen heavy-duty accelerator cannon. All of these were currently spiking the hegemony ship's gravitic field. "Is this it? Did we go to war with the hegemony? And this is the first news we've had of it."
"Hail incoming, in Colville,"
the comms officer reported, sounding calmer than Hevea felt.
"Let's hear it."
Over the comms came a bell-like voice. For some reason, it sounded familiar as it declaimed,
"Take flight, O villains crouching so to shield the right inheritor of all our wrath. Begone, lest our fury fall upon you like your namesake."
"The fuck?" Keffi muttered at Hevea's elbow.
"Ship name is Broken Harvest," the comms officer confirmed,
and Hevea sighed in weird relief. It was the Essiel from the concrete bunker. Not war then. Not yet, anyway.
"Stall them. Something ritual, respectful. Basically time-wasting," he directed. "Tell them we're taking them seriously and are convening our most important people to prepare a fitting response."
What is this, Agent? Kefi demanded.
Believe it or not, they're a crime syndicate. That is one hell of a big ship for gangsters.
Don't I know it?
What do we think they can do?
And Hevea could only goggle at the Broken Harvest as it came at them. Was it named after the gang, or did the ship come first? It wasn't a full-on hegemony diplomatic barge, but it was still twice the size of the Mordant's Hammer. Scans showed superior firepower, and what looked to be some advanced gravitic shielding. On the other side of Jericho, the old Samphire was getting underway from dock. However, the Hammer could have run rings about the antique warship, and the Harvest could take them both.
What do they want? Kefi demanded.
They want the Vulture, he said. Can we run?
Not and take the salvage ship with us, Kefi said.
The Vulture could actually run faster if she carried us, but we'd still both be slower than that thing.
Can we sink drives?
Not in the time we've got.
Because you really didn't want to hit Unspace in two locked ships where one drive wasn't perfectly aligned with the other.
Hevea had seen the result one time, and it had started a brief panic about the return of the architects.
They're hailing us again, the comms officer said.
Hegemony don't shoot first, Kefi muttered. They bluster and they defend themselves. But they don't...
This one will, Hevea decided. It's renegade. Mad, maybe.
The unspeakable Aklu, the razor and the hook.
And perhaps it wasn't even madness. Perhaps Essiel society threw up outliers like Aklu to fill a proactive void that would otherwise remain empty and was occasionally useful.
Orders, Agent?
He'd made his decision, he realised. It was a bittersweet one, but today was not the day to die for a good cause, not even for Mordant House.
Get me the Vulture, he said.
Idris. The crew of the Vulture had been desperately trying to get the Hammer on comms. The sudden arrival of a hegemony maybe warship hadn't gone unnoticed by them either. And when Hevea's voice finally came through, as they crowded around the captain's chair, the release of tension was an almost physical shock.
Some old friends of yours, Hevea told them. Broken Harvest. Demanding we give you up.
And are you going to? Chris demanded.
Telemiae there.
What? Idris demanded, leaning in beside Chris.
Why me?
Get to your pilot station, Telemiae, Hevea told him shortly. This is how it's going to go. We're pulling back, but not as fast as their ship's coming on. And it's a full-on hegemony fighting ship, which means my little sloop won't hold her off for long.
So, what now? Chris demanded, as Idris squeezed past Trine's metal body to get to his seat.
So I'm decoupling you. I want you to fall into Unspace as quickly as you can. Just jump right out and we'll do the same. Telemiae, I'll link you to my navigator. Make sure we don't end up clashing.
So we stutter jump together, in system, Idris asked politely. He was already calculating a course to the deep void, but felt the illusion of cooperation was worth maintaining.
We both know you'll go on the lamb straight off.
The knowing edge in Hevea's voice cut deep.
Maybe that's best for now. And once you're clear of us, I know full well that I've got no hold on you. I'm Hugh, and you spacers will take every chance to book authority.
Not entirely fair, Chris protested, although Ollie shouting, "Damn right!" over her probably didn't help.
It's like this, Hevea's voice went on.
They could hear the faint babble of his crew behind him as they readied ship systems to face the Broken Harvest.
Mordant House is only interested in the architects,
This isn't about you. And I know you all have very different loyalties, but this is way bigger than any one government. If the architects are back, everyone needs to know. I am therefore pleading with you to get your ship to Berlinhof, with or without the Amaru. Berlinhof has embassies for every major galactic power, and specifically for Executor Solis. You should know that the Heaven's Sword, your own damn sorority ship, is there right now, along with the Thunder Child, in the most overt display of gunboat diplomacy I ever saw. All because of even the first sniff of architect involvement. If you value anything beyond your own skins and profits, come testify there. You'll be heroes, and once this is all out and public, you'll be safe. Idris wondered how much of that the man believed. We need to discuss it, Idris told Haveir over the comms. Just think about it, came the reply, and then, right, they're on us. Decoupling you. The umbilical had already withdrawn, and Idris's board showed him a warning that the hammer's clamps were retracting. Ready, Idris replied. He coaxed a drachm of force from the vulture's reaction drives to push them away from the hammer the moment they were free. Perhaps the broken harvest assumed they were fulfilling its demands, as it changed course to intercept the smaller vessel while keeping its weapons targeted on Haveir's ship. Idris let the vulture tumble, as though drifting away from the hammer, while calculating the space between the vessels. Mass screwed with gravity, so a complex gravitic operation like entering unspace wasn't wise when in another ship's shadow, especially if that ship was already plotting its own jump. He had a weird sense then, as if the universe really was a sheet and three fingers were pressing dimples into it. Here he was. Here was the hammer's leash contracted navigator. And there was the alien mind that guided the broken harvest. Ogdru, the species was called. He pictured it like a predatory whale. Vast bulk. Long jaws. The others weren't all in suspension pods yet, but they'd just have to go through the final motions on the other side. Even as the harvest swooped in, he activated the vulture's gravitic drive and yanked them into unspace. And they fell away from the Jericho system into the deep abyss.